Since the beginning of time, man has always been engaged in a quest to be remembered. One generation seeks to leave something behind as a tribute, as a marker that said, I was here. If you ever visit Washington, D.C., you can take the time touring the monuments, the Lincoln Memorial, the Washington Monument, the Jefferson Memorial, each one reminding a future generation of someone that once was. But on a much simpler note, if you ever to hike the hills of Idaho, northern Idaho, where the old abandoned silver mines are, as you make your way through the mountains and you find patches of grass, you'll stumble across rocks. And on these rocks are the name of miners from hundreds of years ago and the date that they died, etched in by friends who felt that for some reason the world needed to remember these men. And it's appropriate. It's something we do. In fact, it's one of the reasons that we so value how we teach and train the next generation. We care. We want to prepare them because they are our legacy. We remember them. In fact, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, was a very friendly, smiling sheriff in rural Kentucky. And his memory is largely forgotten except for a faded photograph, a couple county records, and a great-great-great-grandson standing in the pulpit at Fourth. I am his legacy, just as you are the legacy to generations gone before you, and just as you will leave legacies generations after you. But Solomon dealt with this issue, the idea of how to be remembered. Exactly what do we do that leaves something behind that will endure? Because this world is a difficult place. This world plows through history, and it forgets. And beginning in chapter 1 of the book of Ecclesiastes, read with me, please. Chapter 1, beginning in verse 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north, and around goes the wind. On its circuit, the wind returns. All the streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they flow again. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. What has been is and what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there such a thing which is said, see, this is new? It has been already in the ages before. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of latter things yet to be among those which come after. This is not the most encouraging passage that I have ever read in the Bible. In fact, this is not really the kind of thing that you would consider to arm yourself with on a bright Monday morning as it comes tomorrow. The beginning of a new work week, and this is an ample opportunity for us to sit and consider just how worthless and how toilsome and how forgotten our work week will be. I hope you're encouraged. Are you blessed yet? But Solomon certainly faces this issue. What is actually permanent? Is anything that we are engaged in, will we leave a mark? Will we do anything that leaves a token to say, I was once here, I did something? Now, Solomon was a man who I believe is the author of this book, a man unusually gifted by God with wisdom. And he considered carefully the thoughts and the ideas that he puts down on paper. And he identifies several things to begin with, several places in which all is toil. In fact, the motto of the entire book, it's repeated at the middle of chapter 12, was found in verse 2. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Everything is vain. Everything is in some sense worthless. It is to be forgotten. It will not achieve its desired end. It is vain. But like I said, Solomon identifies several areas that I'd like to consider this morning in which it specifically he notes that there is vanity. In chapter number 2, beginning in verse 18. Solomon writes, I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? Yet he will be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under sun. This also is vanity. So Solomon identifies the first area of vanity, namely work. Work. All the work we engage in, as Solomon identifies, is vain. And here are the reasons why. I hated my toil, seeing that I must leave it to the man who comes after me. You know, you've heard the expression, you can't take it with you. Nobody ever takes a U-Haul to the grave. You leave it behind for the next generation. No matter what work you engage in, no matter what you build, no matter what you accomplish, it is destined to go to others who did not labor. It is destined to go to others behind you who have not put in the time, the effort for it. You don't take it with you. And Solomon knew this well. It's not as if this is merely the lament of a 15-year-old boy with his first summer job thinking, this is so worthless, why am I doing this? No, this is Solomon. Solomon was a tremendous builder, a king of kings, a master. In 1 Kings chapter 10, let me read you just a bit about the wealth of Solomon. So when you hear the words of all is toil, all this toil is vanity, understand exactly what Solomon is saying is vanity. Here's Solomon. Now, the weight of the gold that came to Solomon in one year was 666 talents of gold, beside that which came from the explorers and from the business of the merchants and from all the kings of the west and from the governors of the land. King Solomon, he made 200 large shields of beaten gold. 600 shekels of gold went into each shield. They made 300 shields of beaten gold. 3 minas of gold went into each shield. And the king put them in the house of the forest of Lebanon. And the king made a great ivory throne and overlaid it with the finest gold. It goes on, he says, and all of King Solomon's drinking vessels were made of gold. He had a fleet of ships of Tarshish at sea with a fleet of Hiram. Once every 3 years, the fleet of ships of Tarshish used to come back bringing gold, silver, ivory, apes, and peacocks. So when Solomon says, all the toil is vanity, Solomon had engaged in toil on a level we can never imagine. It's not, he had worked, he had produced monuments, he had produced amazing things, fleets of ships which sailed out under his name. Behold, the ships of Solomon, here they come. Palaces, amazing palaces that were beautiful, that were known the world over. A temple for God, Solomon's temple. A throne that people would come for miles to see, to observe, to see it as it was covered and sheathed in gold. When Solomon says, I have toiled, he is not kidding. He has worked and he has produced things that by all accounts should endure to generation after generation. Solomon should have made a name for himself, but he comes to this realization that all is vanity. My work will be left for those behind me. In fact, it was. Solomon, like every other man, died. And his works, his monuments, his buildings, his fleets, his soldiers, his armies, they were left to his sons. And he was forgotten. He leaves it to another. The summary of the work of the toil is vanity. A poem was written long ago by Mr. Shelley. Let me read it to you. Entitled Ozymandias. I met a traveler from an antique land who said, two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lips sneer of cold command. Tell that its sculpture, well, those passions read, which yet survive, stamped on these lifeless things, the hand that mocked them and the heart that fed. And on the pedestal these words appear, my name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, in despair. Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sand stretch far away. The poet tells the story of in the midst of a desert, the remains of a large statue, and all that is left are two legs and an inscription on the base. It's the inscription of a mighty king, Ozymandias, who once ruled over a tremendous realm, full of castles and of forts and of houses and of towns and of armies. And nothing is left except for his bragging. Nothing is left except for his words proclaiming that he will never be forgotten. And yet, like the way happens with all men, he too is forgotten. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Work is vain. But Solomon goes on. Not only is work vain, he continues on the theme with wealth. Chapter 5, beginning in verse 10. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This also is vanity. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. And what advantage has their owner but to see them with his eyes? Sweet is the sleep of a laborer, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep. Now, we've already seen, not only was Solomon engaged in much labor, he had left buildings and monuments behind, but he had accumulated vast wealth. It says that he was known the world over in 1 Kings. Solomon was a tremendously wealthy man with riches untold. Now, I couldn't even imagine trying to translate in today's economy, but imagine it was a good 401k before the economy went downhill. Solomon had wealth beyond belief. And yet, all he could say with all this money is the summary, this also is vanity. He who loves money will not be satisfied, nor he that loves his wealth and income. And certainly our own experience bears this out. Is there ever such a thing as too much money? You know, we've all heard the expression, when interviewing a rich man, how much money is enough? Just a little bit more. Vanity of vanity, all is vanity. The pursuit of wealth is vain. There's nothing to be gained. As Solomon points out, he gets more money, and what does he receive in return? He has more people to support, more wages to pay out, more mouths to feed. And eventually it comes to the point when what advantage is this increased wealth to the owner but to see them with his eyes? At some point, you've achieved so much money that you can't even theoretically spend it, and so the only thrill you have is just to look at the piles or to look at the number. That's what Solomon says. What advantage has it except to the eyes? The only joy Solomon could now take out of his money was just to look at it. Now, I confess, I've never really been in that position in my life. I can only speculate what that's like. But I imagine the frustration when there's nothing left to purchase. There's nothing left to hope for. Nothing left to dream. Christmas, there's no point making a wish list. You've already purchased everything. There is nothing more to be gained. This also is vanity. It is worthless. It will be forgotten. There is nothing to remain. So Solomon points out labor, the work and the toil, it is vain. Money, wealth, it is vain. But he continues. He continues on with pleasure. Chapter 2, beginning in verse 1. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this also was vanity. Now, Solomon was in a unique position to actually try this. Solomon had access to fleets. He could have received food and delicacies from any part of the world. If he wanted it, he got it, and he got it as fresh as it could possibly be. If you can imagine, he wants sushi, it comes in from Japan. If he wants it, it's there. He has access. A common person would have never even dreamed of the delicacies that Solomon would have sampled. Whatever food he wanted, he could have had. Whatever sexual pleasure. It says in 1 Kings, he had 700 wives and princesses and 300 concubines. 1,000 women at his beck and call. He knew what he was talking about. So when he says in his heart, come now, I will test you, my heart. I will test myself with pleasure. He had done so to a degree that none of us could ever fathom. Solomon had drunk deeply of all the pleasures that this world could potentially produce. He had savored it all. And the result is, it's vanity. Now, this is a wise man. Solomon is uniquely wise. And here, he's gone through his work, his labor, his toil, and it will be forgotten. It provided no fulfillment, no satisfaction. It will not be remembered. It is vain. His money, he accumulated vast sums of wealth, a fortune that was without equal in his day. Incredible riches. And it was vain. It was nothing. It was worthless. He had savored all the pleasure that could be imagined, sexually, concerning food, concerning whatever delights that he could think of, whatever technology they had in the day. He had enjoyed it. And the result is vanity. It's all vanity. This is the words of experience. Solomon proclaiming, it's all vain, it's all worthless. There is nothing that will make you remembered. You too will be forgotten. The rich as the poor. But he continues, not only among the things, the pleasures and the enjoyments of his life, he even talks about things like wise living. If you look in verse 12 of chapter 2. Verse 12 of chapter 2. So I turn to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do who comes after the king? Only what has already been done. Then I saw that there is more gain in wisdom than in folly, and there is more gain in light than in darkness. The wise person has eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet, And yet I perceived that the same event happens to all of them. Then I said in my heart, what happens to the fool will happen to me also. Why then have I been so very wise? And I said in my heart that this also is vanity. For the wise as of the fool, there is no enduring remembrance, seeing that in the days to come, all will have been long forgotten. How the wise dies just like the fool. So Solomon now considers maybe even virtue. So we've seen toil, we've seen wealth, we've seen pleasure. Now we even see virtue. To live a wise life, an upright life, a good life. These things. And now certainly Solomon did see some value in them. He says as much, I saw there is more gain in wisdom than in folly. There is something to be gained in the current life we live. But the end result is this. The wise man dies just like the fool. And of both, there is no enduring memory. There is no enduring memory. Now, certainly with the advent of the internet and with the proliferation of books and stuff, we think that nothing will ever be forgotten. Everything now will be documented and remembered. And in some ways, that might be correct. But the truth is, as time goes on, we become increasingly irrelevant. You know, if we think about us as a congregation, here we sit today as a local body, an assembled body of believers that God has put together. And we are unique. We're a Fourth Baptist Church of Plymouth, Minnesota. But we are not unique in the fact that there have been churches before us, generations before us. Once, 1,000 years ago, 1,500 years ago, 2,000 years ago, well, maybe not 2,000, but close, there was a church just like us gathered on the Lord's Day for the worship of God the Father. And you know what? The church is now forgotten. Memories fade. Even good memories, even those that do well, even those that righteously live before God, the memory fades. This becomes almost a test for us. If all is vain, if everything's vanity, and we cannot be remembered, what is the point? Why? Is there a good reason I should get out of bed and go to work tomorrow morning? So far, not so much. Up to now, not doing so good. But there is something, there's a conclusion to this book, a counterpoint, for which all that we've said up to now provides the backdrop. If you would, we are now going to spend the remainder of our time in the final verses of Ecclesiastes, chapter 12, beginning in verse 13. Ecclesiastes, chapter 12, beginning in verse 13. The end of the matter. All has been heard. And this is the end of the matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. We finally see this glimmer of hope. We finally see the idea that we can actually make a mark. We can be remembered. That we can leave something behind. That all that is done here is not for nothing. That it is not vain. That there is purpose, there is reason, there is hope. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. So he starts in verse 13, the end of the matter. We've now drawn to the close, the conclusion. In some sense, if you can compare this to in a legal setting, when it's the beginning of the closing arguments. Everything that needs to be said has been said. It's now time to summarize the relevant points, make the relevant statement, and then render a decision. This is where we're at. The end of the matter. All has been heard. Everything that needs to be brought into consideration has been brought into consideration. Everything that needs to be said has now been uttered. Solomon has correctly pointed out the futility of labor, of wealth, of pleasure, of virtue. But here we conclude with this. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. To fear God and keep His commandments. This is the reason. This is the counterpoint to all His vanity. Because here we find something that is genuine and real. Something that is, as we can say, permanent. Something that leaves a mark. Something to be remembered. Fear God and keep His commandments. Number one, to fear God, to be rightly related to God. To be rightly related to God. To reverence God as he deserves, to fear God. I hope that's what's drawn you here this morning. The reverence, the worship of God. Now, there's much that goes into that consideration of what does it mean to fear God. Now, often we want to emphasize the word reverence, and I think that's appropriate. But I think it's also appropriate to remember the idea of just good old-fashioned fear. He is a mighty God, a powerful God. He deserves our respect and our awe, our submission to fear God. This is not a vain thing to do. This is a permanent thing, to fear God. May I ask you this morning, are you here worshiping God, fearing God? Are you rightly related to God? Now, for some of you, that may look like salvation, to trust in the work of Jesus Christ on the cross to save you from your sin. For some of you, that probably looks like confession. Right now is your heart right before God. As 1 John 1:9 points out, we confess our sin, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sin and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. Is there sin in your life? Are you fearing God right now? If you are not fearing God as you should, let me tell you right now, your life, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Your life is futile. Now, I don't want to say you have a worthless existence, but nothing will be remembered. It is worthless. We are called to fear God. We are called to be rightly related to God. We are called to be rightly obedient to God and to obey His commandments. To obey His commandments, to know the word of the Lord and to do what He has said, to be rightly related and to be rightly obedient. This week, have you lived a worthwhile life? Have you feared God? Have you been right with God? Have you been obedient to God? Have you done what the word of God says? Now, certainly that's a broad call. I don't know specifically in your life what it may mean. But have you obeyed the word of the Lord? Whatever that may be in your life. If you have not, let me tell you that Solomon has given clear instruction as to what your life has been. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. It is a worthless life to live a life apart from God. It is as Solomon said, vanity of vanities. All is vanity. Now, there is a reason why. There is an underlying reason to this. Fear God and obey His commandments. It's because of this. The final verse. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. I think often we've probably read that verse, fear God, keep His commandments. But there's an underpinning reason for that. For the purpose that God will bring everything into judgment. All the secret things, whether good or evil. Because in reality, we are not forgotten. In reality, the works you do are not forgotten. The deeds you have accomplished, they are not forgotten. God remembers. God always remembers. So we can look back on things like Pillsbury Baptist Bible College, and it grieves us that it is no longer in existence. But we give thanks to God knowing that the work that Pillsbury has done and the people who were there, it is remembered by God for all eternity. And God will keep track. This becomes our motivation for living. This is the reason that we can get up on Monday morning. I don't know what tomorrow morning is going to be like. Tomorrow morning we start senior high camp. I am praying for a 75 degree day with lots of sun. Because if it's cloudy and overcast, we're going to have a wonderful week upstairs in the lodge in a big room doing a lot of things. But I run out of games after a while. So I am praying for a beautiful sunny Monday morning. But that is not enough of a motivation to get you out of bed. Simply having a wonderful, bright, sunny day isn't sufficient. You have to have a reason of why should I get up? Why should I go on? Let me give it to you. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. Today, tomorrow, as in the privacy of your own room, as you kneel before God in prayer, let's remember. As you come before God in His Word to study what He has for your life, that's remembered. As you serve Him, whether in the nursery or as an usher, that's remembered. Nothing is forgotten. You know, when I referenced earlier those old graves in Idaho, those men are forgotten. Those miners, their memory has long since faded. Matter of fact, if you look at those gravestones, you can only make out certain letters and words because time and weather have worn away most of it. And so in many ways, we've forgotten everything about those men. There are no records. There are no pictures. Even the last marker to their existence is now faded. But their memory is not lost. God remembers. And God judges all things. How can we combat a life of vanity of vanity, all his vanities? It is a life spent in the fear of God and the obedience of his word. Now, certainly that is a very, very broad application. What are you supposed to walk away with today? I'm supposed to fear God and obey him. That's a wide net to cast. But that's the end of the matter, as Solomon has seen it. Fear God and keep his commandments. So let me challenge you today, tomorrow, this week, to lead a life that is worthwhile. To lead a life that is memorable. To lead a life that will withstand the scrutiny of God and his judgment someday. Vanity of vanity, all is vanity. That's what Solomon said concerning his pursuit for his wealth, his work, his pleasure, and his virtue. Yet here, we can avoid vain. Here, we can avoid worthlessness. A life committed to God, to fear God, and to keep his commandments. Father, I pray that you would convict our hearts this morning. If we are not fearing you as we should, if we are not in right fellowship with you right now, God, I pray that you would convict our hearts, that we would ask for forgiveness, Father, and be rightly related to you. And Lord, in doing so, that we can live in such a way that we withstand the scrutiny, Lord, that we live a worthwhile life, that we avoid being worthless. Bless this morning, Lord. Bless our fellowship. I pray that it be for your honor and glory. In Jesus' name, amen.